Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsinites look at a very busy week in the Capitol. But before that, let's listen to a few sights and sounds this week in the Capitol on this week's edition of Wish I Was There.
The Wisconsin Winery Association urges you to vote yes on this bill that would allow wineries to remain open until midnight.
Specifically today, we are taking our focus on the thousands of kids who are in foster care in Wisconsin right now.
If we lose a lot of federal money, there'll be a lot of pressure on the legislature to look at that current list of services and say, gee, do people really need all these? Should we knock one out? Should we knock another one out?
Mary Burke had never really been in a tough race. She had had one campaign with a contested school board candidate. That was it.
It costs $34,000 a year to imprison someone in the state of Wisconsin. I'm talking about $5,000 per kid per year intervention and get them at grade level with reading skills.
Other Midwest states are eating our lunch when it comes to clean energy. It's as simple as that. We mentioned about wind. I think wind now is about 2 or 3% of our energy production. We were about the same place as Iowa 10, 15 years ago, about 2, 3%. Iowa now, I think, is up to 37% of their energy comes from wind. But what was the big knock on renewables originally? Well, they're much more expensive. Iowa's electricity rates are 30% less than Wisconsin's.
The impact on municipalities, school districts, counties, and our local partners can be severe when assessments that accurately reflect the market value of property are overturned. State and local property tax systems must be fairly administered and tax burdens equitably distributed among taxpayers. A property tax system that is inefficient or that disproportionately falls upon one sector is not equitable and will negatively impact the state's economy.
We have a group of aggressive assessors who are seeking to command a higher property tax collection through a higher assessment from certain commercial properties, retailers, and we're aware of some restaurants that have been put through the same positions.
So, JR, let's talk about the budget first, the budget that isn't materializing yet. Let's just take a look at what happened this week. Mm-hmm. So, Wednesday, about 11:15, Speaker Voss.
Tuesday,
thank you. Thanks for correcting me. Speaker Voss, John Nygren come in, say we just met. 40 minutes with the Senate didn't work. The Senate, well, finger-pointing begins.
Yes.
Then Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Co-Chair Alberta Darling walk into the press room to give their rebuttal. It's an assembly problem. Then back comes Voss and Nygren. And the Majority Leader of the Assembly. And they were a lot of finger-pointing. Mm-hmm. Trading insults, maybe that goes too far. But anyway, they were both blaming each other. Then Thursday, they have a moment, Fitzgerald and Voss with the governor.
Wednesday.
Thanks, man. I am off on my dates. And Fitzgerald tells you and other reporters we're back on track. So what happened?
Well, first, Tuesday was supposed to be a day of negotiations, trying to get things rolling. They met for 40 minutes at Fiscal Bureau, and things fell apart. In all of our years covering the budget, Steve, have you ever seen the two leaders of the same party come to the press room, not us going there, but coming to the press room to us to air their grievances from private meetings in public and lay it all out for us what the differences are?
No, honestly, I haven't. But this was a week that I saw a lot of things that I hadn't seen before.
So you would try to say there's a new low in relations for two leaders from the same party when it comes to the budget. I have not seen that ever. I even asked Fitzgerald during this exchange, you always tell us you won't negotiate through the media. Well, how come you're here?
You're standing here in the middle of the press room.
Doing the exact same thing. They were trying to put their spin on what's happening and say it's not us, it's them.
Right.
So, and they basically blame each other for their talks breaking down. Also during that exchange on Tuesday, Fitzgerald talked about this heavy truck fee. Amy Loudenbeck is a member of the finance team from the Assembly. She has proposed or come up with an idea that would assess a fee on heavy trucks, around 59,000 pounds or so, that they would pay per mile for, because they do more damage to the roads, right? There's more wear and tear from these trucks.
Right.
It could be a new revenue stream for the transportation fund and be a bridge to other things, a long-term solution.
Just a PS. Their registration fees have not been increased since 2008, which is the last time it was increased on our vehicles.
Fitzgerald walks the room on Tuesday and says, that is a non-starter. The governor will never support that. We're not even talking about it. Wednesday, Robin, Scott, and Scott had their weekly meeting in the governor's office. Fitzgerald then goes to his caucus that afternoon and talks about the heavy truck fee, comes out and says, it's something we discussed. Well, what happened from Tuesday saying it's a non-starter to Wednesday afternoon saying we talked about it? The meeting with the governor. So all signs point to Scott Walker being at least open to this idea. Now, as of this morning,
considering this surtax on heavy trucks.
As of this morning, his office has not responded to my request for comment. He has not tweeted about it. He has not, as far as I know, addressed it directly. Maybe he will later on. But his silence suggests that he's not pushing back against this thing. Maybe there is a window where Scott Walker and Robin Voss are now aligned on transportation, which is interesting because we've talked for months about how this is all about Robin Voss is isolated because he wants more revenue for transportation. Mm-hmm. Scott Fitzgerald and Scott Walker are on the same page saying no new revenue. Scott Fitzgerald saying, as long as the governor says no new revenue, i.e. the gas tax registration fee, we stand with the governor. It's ridiculous, in his words, for Voss to keep digging on this. All of a sudden now the script is flipped, because now we're seeing the possibility of Robin Voss and Scott Walker being aligned on this fee and Scott Fitzgerald having to find a way to get his caucus to a solution.
Okay, but that crash and burn that you and I heard moments before we taped the show was five Republican senators, Nass, Craig, Strobel, Lassay, and Kapinga, saying Loudenbeck's proposal to raise the fees on heavy trucks is dead. Is it?
Well, let's do some math. There are 20 Republicans, need 17 to pass anything. So 20 minus 5 is 15. They are short. Now, that isn't to take into consideration that Van Wongard has told me this week he's a no on the budget unless 94 North South gets back on track. We all know Rob Coles of Green Bay has long had concerns about structural deficit. This budget would increase it, last projections that I saw. So where's Rob right now? I mean, you can go on down the list.
You can.
But people have issues. So the question becomes, okay, if the governor goes with some Republicans on this heavy truck fee, what does Fitzgerald have to do now to get his caucus to a solution? The short answer is we don't know.
Okay,
we're locked in right now to an impasse that is not getting better.
Tomorrow starts the new fiscal year, fiscal year 2018 for a state government, but we continue spending without a budget at the old level, so there's no crisis there. It's not a Washington-like crisis.
We had school aid runs came out today for the general school aids, but there's no real big boost in general school aids. It's a $4.6 billion a year expenditure, so when you're talking like maybe $75 million more, it's not a big deal. So the school run that we saw today is basically restating what they got this past year until October-ish. Mm-hmm. They can survive okay without knowing for sure what they're going to get the max, especially because the big boost would be categorical aids. Cities, counties, villages, levies set what? Some budget set in October-ish?
Yeah.
So there's no like real pressure right now from that perspective. There could be some transportation-related issues in August, but there's no pressure right now to get it done. Other than if you're a Republican right now and you control both houses of legislature and the governor's office and you can't pass a budget come August 1, September 1.
That's the egg on the face argument.
It's the indictment of your ability to govern, and it feeds into I've heard this week a little bit about the perception of you guys are just like Washington anymore.
Oh, okay. But meanwhile, let's throw it forward. There's no meeting of finance next week.
No.
Of course, with the holiday on Tuesday, that mm-hmm. kind of shortens the week. So they're not going to meet, but Senate Republicans are going to be briefed by Bob Lang on an update for what has passed so far.
On Thursday of next
Thursday.
Week.
Okay. One possibility, although I don't believe it, they're not going to authorize their own budget, are they? Do you believe that?
Fitzgerald has talked about that, but so far hasn't followed through with that suggestion. He keeps saying he's got to talk to his caucus some more, see where they are. Now, is it later in the process? Maybe. Then you can kind of put pressure on the other house to pass something, you know, see where Robin's votes really are in his caucus. But if you look kind of at the calendar, the best case scenario right now, if you're an optimist, Senate Republicans come in on Thursday, they can find a way to reach a deal in their caucus about transportation, education, taxes, these big things that are left. Talk to Robin Voss, get something worked out over the weekend. Finance could, in theory, come in that Tuesday, January 11th. have their omnibus motions. They vote until early hours of the 12th.
Yep.
Fiscal Bureau gets a week to draft the thing. In theory, they could be on the floor that following week, go back to back and pass it.
In theory. Joint Finance is not bad since June 15th.
More likely we're talking best case scenario, maybe that week, but probably in July.
Okay.
That's if you're an optimist still. We still got some issues to work out.
I understand. JR, I'm a bit, you know me, I'm a bit of a geek. So I went to Fiscal Bureau and I said, if the $500 million for borrowing recommended by the governor, and if this additional $350 million that Fitzgerald came in and told we reporters we need to maintain our current projects, if we borrowed an additional $850 million, how much would it cost, the debt service costs? And in the next budget, 2017 budget, both the $500 million recommended by the governor, $350 million being discussed by Senate Republicans, would cost $29.1 million. But then when you look out into the 1921 budget cycle, an additional $149.7 million. Now, I'm not arguing the position of Voss and Assembly Republicans. I'm just saying that you build in some major debt service costs if you go with these two borrowing plans.
And this becomes the Robin Voss argument of what's more conservative, to pay as you go or to borrow and put in the credit card. What's interesting to some folks on the Assembly side is that just this current budget, they built in $500 million in bonding for this biennium, but at $350 million in contingency bonding. What that was Joint Finance had to approve that extra money be let out. And how did it get done? The seven Republicans, all six of them, joined the four Democrats on the committee to pass it 10-6, with all seven Republicans opposed, saying that's too much borrowing. Well, now, some Republicans are going, wait a second, you guys want $850 when you couldn't accept that? What's going on? The Loudenbeck idea of this heavy truck fee is seen by some as a possible bridge to a long-term solution. Possibly tolling. So in theory, again a theory, you could do something like the heavy truck fee, get you through this next budget without doing that much additional borrowing. The tolling could kick in, best case scenario, 2021, gives you a new revenue stream to help with the big mega projects in southeastern Wisconsin, for example.
Weingarten's north-south, Voss's north-south.
Yes. The extra money from the heavy truck fee could be maybe directed toward the local roads to help. So there are ways to do this. The rub becomes, like these five senators are raising objection, do they want to raise a fee right now or bring additional revenue to transportation? These five guys are saying no. So where do you get to a solution? Because Robin Voss said on Tuesday, we will not approve new borrowing without a new revenue stream. If he sticks to that, his caucus sticks with him, where do you get through from that impasse with those five guys saying no new truck fee?
I agree. And on this point, Charles Franklin, the latest poll last week, he polled on what's your biggest priority? And respondents said, number one, K-12 schools, 37% of them cited that. But number two was roads. But let's dig a little deeper in that, JR, because of the 23% of respondents who said, my highest priority is roads, the follow-up question, would you pay more higher taxes for roads, which is your top priority? The no's were 51%. The yeses were 46%, which when you factor in a margin of error of 4.5%, it's kind of a horse apiece.
Yeah.
Both sides in this debate can use this poll, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. There is an argument from so many Republicans saying that when we go back to our districts and talk to people, like I heard one member told me that they do these surveys of their constituents, and they're not scientific, but they come back. He said, I don't get people saying borrow more. I get people saying pay for it. You know, I'm willing to pay for this. Now, it is an interesting dynamic for Republicans to be arguing about raising fees and taxes.
Yes.
Another party of tax cuts.
Yes.
So some conservative groups like Americans for Prosperity, WMC, are going, what's going on here? What's this dynamic developing the Capitol where you guys, on the one hand, are talking about, you know, how much to cut property taxes, how much to cut income taxes, but arguing about fees and gas taxes, transportation funds.
And just a P.S. on the Charles Franklin poll. The top priorities, 37% were K-12 schools. Next was in health care. Mm-hmm. So then to do justice, we ought to say, if you care so much about health care, would you pay higher taxes for health care? 59% said yes, 35% said no. It was just an interesting snapshot coming in terms of this did to, did not finger pointing on roads. Also, let's do one more thing on the Charles Franklin poll. I was intrigued by this, JR. Which level of government gets it right? Okay, federal government, Washington, only 22% of the time do they get it right all the time or most of the time. Madison, state government, 47% of the time, 47% they get it all the time correct or most of the time correct. But then local government, 64% of the time they get it correct all the time or most of the time. The disparity here between Washington, which gets it right all the time or most, 22%, and Madison, 47%. I just find it interesting.
It's the
here I go wonking out
hate
again.
Congress but love your congressmen dynamic, right? So what the re-election rate for Congress, which is like, you know, despised by everybody, is still like 90-some percent.
Oh, it's 88, 90, somewhere.
Whatever
there.
It is. Right. So it's just dynamic of that. The closer you are to it, you know. So that's part of that dynamic, I think.
That's very interesting. Okay, we have new approval ratings for both the president. 51% disapprove, thumbs down. 41% approve. And Governor Walker, 48-48. That a big deal? I know you're going to get into that later.
The quick note with President Trump, a lot of those numbers really haven't changed since November, October, actually. Like the cares about someone like me, honest, shows good judgment. He's been upside down for a long time. What's noteworthy is that the percentage of people who approve of his performance has stayed the same, but his disapproval has gone up, which frankly reflects a national trend of him kind of holding this kind of core support group, but people who are maybe don't know moving to the disapprove camp.
Okay.
For Governor Walker, best numbers since October of 2014, before he got reelected. He was upside down all of 15 and 16, so it's not great that you're just back to even after, what, 6.5 years in office almost. But where he was, that's momentum.
Okay. Let's talk about Senator Ron Johnson on health care. He was kind of a point person, getting in the majority leader's face, saying, do not vote this week. But I just find his positions intriguing because when I first interviewed him in Oshkosh, when he said, I'm going to run for the U.S. Senate, he cited the critical illness of his newborn daughter as a reason. But now, this week, am I reading this right? He says that the potential Senate bill wasn't hard enough.
Well, it's a combination
of pre-existing conditions.
It's a combination of things.
Correct.
He's been raising all kinds of issues about, like, for example, being paid for, these subsidies. And are they paid for? He's expressed an openness, from what I understand, to pulling back some of the tax cuts proposed in the original Senate bill to make sure this thing is paid for. He's also made clear he would like something more conservative than what the negotiations have produced. So he's got a number of issues with this bill. What's also interesting is he's getting praised by Mark Pocan.
I know.
For helping hold up the process. It's also fascinating that Ron Johnson, who in 2010 made the centerpiece of his campaign, is now one of the leading voices saying, stop, let's put this off. Now, he's made clear he's not a no, he's not yet a yes.
Right.
So in the end, when push comes to shove, will Johnson be there is one of the questions. But he wants it done, in his mind, the right way.
Does he want to cast himself as a profile in courage for telling, I think it was the Journal Sentinel, I told the majority leader, don't jam me on this.
Well, let's go back to October and September, a little bit last year. Where were those guys when Ron Johnson was locked in a tough re-election battle with Russ Feingold? They were nowhere to be seen. All this money came in the last minute of October, November. Oh, my gosh, this guy's got a chance. Let's go there and help him out.
Oh, payback.
So Ron Johnson owes nobody anything right now in Washington, D.C.
He's announced this is his last term.
Yep. Not running for election. Don't care. I'll do what I want to do kind of thing. So there's a freedom in that a little bit for him. But, yeah, it's really fascinating to watch this guy saying, well, hey, where were you guys?
You alluded to Congressman Pocan. He's citing a study by the Center for American Progress saying 394,100 Wisconsin residents would lose coverage under the Senate bill. Do you trust that number?
I don't know. There are a lot of numbers floating around with this debate. What is going to be interesting to watch politically is if Republicans can push through a repeal and replace or whatever kind of bill they do, all right, when do the changes start to hit? Because this one number this week from the CBO was what? 15 million fewer people have insurance after the first year.
Mm-hmm. Increasing to 22.
The election is going to be
within 10 years.
17 months away, 16 months away, 15, something like that. If people start losing insurance or no longer buying insurance, depending on how you want to look at that debate, if fewer, more people are insured come November of 2018, is somebody get punished for that? That's something that people are got to watch and see.
Let's circle back to Ron Johnson just for a minute. Now he's test-floating the idea of keeping some of the taxes under Obamacare.
He's talking about that. Because, again, he wants it paid for. Talking about the high risk pools we used to have in Wisconsin. He wants to look at that as an option to help those who have pre-existing conditions. So he's floating ideas. Now, for all the attention that he's getting, for all of the kind of, you know, he was on Meet the Press, I think, this past Sunday, for example, there are Democrats saying, oh, wait a second. This guy told us a few months ago, or a month or so ago, that he was joining the working group on the Senate bill.
Yeah, that he was crushing it.
If he was really that influential, wouldn't he have gotten a bill that he liked out of that process? So they're kind of questioning the influence he has, but there's no doubt the attention he's gotten because of his willingness to speak up.
And while we're on Johnson, his approval rating in the Charles Franken poll, 39%?
A little lower than that. So he was...
But he was one percentage point higher than Tammy.
I can't remember Senator the Baldwin. But he doesn't really care anymore. What's interesting is he just ran for election in November.
Right.
All those millions in ads that were spent, and he's back down to like a core electorate doesn't have an opinion of him. It shows you how like the attention span voters have sometimes with things like that.
And while we're on Senator Baldwin up for re-election next year, Nicole Schneider, Green Bay, not going to run?
Yep. So the official word or the kind of sourced word was because of her family. The joke I heard from Democrats was that concern before, after the research book came back on her about the potential hit she could take. Who knows? But first-time candidates, it's a scary proposition. You're talking about a grind from now until, if you get the nomination next November, you will be put to the meat grinder of the national spotlight. Everything you've done that could, every speeding ticket, every tax you didn't pay, whatever it is, will be under the microscope. Do you really want to subject yourself to that and go with that meat grinder for more than a year?
How damaging, Journal Sentinel story about Eric Hovde, that he paid no state income taxes in 2015.
It's going to be fodder for, we see this, Terrence Wall went through this. We had a story about that in 2009. This kind of really comes up for people. Mary Burke had issues with this, and it regularly is a hit for people who've been in private sector, because if you're in the private sector, you don't have a record. So all your other decisions become part of the narrative. Every business deal you did, every tax bill you paid, it becomes part of the who is this person. And, it can cause you a little bit of grief. I'm sure it'll be in a TV ad if he wins the nomination, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the state Supreme Court, which just voted to close its rules conferences. Mm-hmm. That was very bitter back and forth debate. But this week, two unanimous Supreme Court decisions. First of all, the Appleton School District broke the open records law when it created an advisory committee to review instructional materials. That advisory committee was subject and is subject to the state open meetings law. That was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal because it didn't go the other way, which would have created a huge loophole for local governments. But I want to talk for a minute about the other unanimous Supreme Court decision, saying that the Crime Victims Rights Board, created in 1999, cannot sanction, recommend any sanctions or penalties against judges. And this is a case out of Eau Claire County.
Yeah.
And here's what intrigues me. This is the first separation of powers ruling from the Supreme Court that I've seen in decades.
Yeah.
So I just find it fascinating.
So this board was created after voters approved the constitutional amendment in 1993. To enshrine basically victims' rights in the Constitution. I think the board was created in 1997, if I remember correctly. This board had basically this judge.
Five-member board.
This judge handled a case where there were.
Housed in DOJ, excuse me.
This judge handled a case where there was a minor victim of sexual assault who, the trial happened, he was convicted, but he had separate charges pending that were going to be heard about 8 months later. The judge delayed sentencing for the first one until the second one was heard.
And a victim complained.
She filed a complaint. The board found that this judge had violated this victim's rights, wanted her to do a report. He appealed. The Supreme Court was interesting is the court said basically you can't do this, the separation of powers. Interesting, the little nuance of this case, though, is Shirley Abramson said, yeah, you shouldn't have done this, but it's not unconstitutional. She was kind of different from the other ones about these laws are constitutional. The Supreme Court majority said these laws are not constitutional, period, apply to judges. Abramson said if you interpret them correctly, they are, but at the same time, it shouldn't have applied to this guy in this way.
Okay, but my reading of this, and neither of us is lawyers, so we ought to preface it, but my reading of this is you cannot, Crime Victims Board, you cannot sanction judges.
No.
However, law officers and prosecutors, you can still function there. Yep. Yeah, that's my ruling. Okay, I want to turn to Madison Mayor Paul Soglin is a potential candidate for governor. He sat in that chair this week and said he spent $25,000 on a poll with Paul Maslin. He thinks he can raise $15 to $20 million in small donations, and he plans to take his message, the Madison Miracle, jobs, success, low unemployment rate, on the road.
The Wisconsin comeback was a Madison miracle.
Yes. before we hear Mr. Soglin talk about that, what's your take on Paul Soglin as a Democratic candidate for governor?
He's been getting more serious about this. I first talked to him at the state convention early June, mm-hmm. and he talked about, yeah, I'm thinking about it. It's going to be interesting to watch if he gets in. He also, I think, said in a State Journal editorial board meeting that he's preparing simultaneously for running for governor and re-election,
re-election
that following April.
So to a job that pays $139,000. Go ahead.
So does that mean he's like being mayor is a fallback in case doesn't? I mean,
Plan B.
That's interesting to watch. It's interesting. He's been talking about the vulnerabilities that you would expect for a Madison mayor, liberal, calls himself a lefty.
Yeah.
He's saying that it's not that bad. Like and he's also pointing to Bernie Sanders as a model of this guy could do it. Also older than he is. So why can't I?
Yeah, I asked him, would you be running if Bernie Sanders hadn't got 56.8% of the vote in the spring Democratic primary? And he pretty much said no. This opened his eyes. But let's listen to Paul Soglin, Madison mayor, talk about the poll that he conducted, why he conducted it, and the results. Let's go to that poll.
The bottom line is we did a poll. Paul Maslin, a highly respected Democratic
pollster. Yeah, he's from Madison.
And bottom line is, it looks very good. It looked better than I had anticipated on the high end.
Did that poll put you ahead of the Gronics and the Vinehouts and the Flynns and the Dwoxes and the McCabes?
We did not poll any of the other Democratic candidates. We did not poll for a primary. It was head-to-head against Scott Walker.
Okay.
Because that's what this is all about. First, we tested my age.
You're 72.
72. Then we tested what some people would call the negatives. Dane County, tax and spend liberal. Then we tested, gave the key to the city to Fidel Castro. And it didn't hurt.
Okay.
In fact, in some parts of the state outside of Madison, it actually helped. I've been mayor on and off for over 20 years. Whether you measure it with one poll or one sample or whatever, Madison is considered to be one of the best cities in the U.S.
Okay, J.R., Soglin polled on giving the key to the city of Madison to Fidel Castro in 1975.
Yeah.
I ran into my barber and I said, I just had this fascinating interview with the mayor of Madison thinking about running for governor. He mentioned giving the key to the city to Fidel Castro. And my barber looked at me and said, I remember that. So what is Soglin trying to do by polling on Dane County liberal and Fidel Castro key to the city?
See how people view his vulnerabilities. I mean, he's acknowledging basically these things that would be used in a there. If he ran for governor and if he won the nomination, there would be a campaign ad with a picture of a Paul Soglin from the late 70s next to Fidel Castro and how he supports a brutal dictator. So
that's
it's one thing to ask that question in a poll.
Right.
Another have it to be in a TV ad pounding him on like Castro's treatment of the Cuban people. So
that's true.
Something to watch if he does run and does win the
nomination. Absolutely fascinating. Okay, we got a couple of minutes to go through your stock picks. Rising.
So Scott Walker, I mean, the Marquette numbers were good for him, especially when you think about the momentum. Now, there's a caveat.
48-48.
Mark, the caveat is that Franklin talked about how the poll sample is more Republican than usually is. The question he had is this a fluke or is a long-term trend? We may, there's always a possibility. We had a realignment after Trump's win last fall in Wisconsin. It's to be determined, though. So that caveat aside, polls help drive perception, shape perception. Perception is Scott Walker's numbers have been improving.
Mm-hmm.
He's in better shape. A real good number to look at is right track, wrong track. We've gone from being like just above right track to right wrong track to being a 9 or 11 point gap. That's a number, if you're an incumbent, you watch. People are more optimistic about the way the state's going. That's good news for Scott Walker. Add in the job announcements he had, like unemployment's down to the lowest it's been since 1999.
3.1, 1999?
No.
Party like 1999?
Arch of speed bumps, all right? There's this budget that's hanging out there. It seems like, from talking to people this week, he's not getting mud on his shoes yet from the budget being kind of like in this morass. It's more the legislature's fault. But if it becomes August 1st, September 1st, October 1st, does Scott Walker get pulled into that? This transportation thing, where is he going to go? Now, I said all the signs, Walker hasn't said yay or nay, but the signs are he's open to this heavy truck fee. What will that do for supporters? Will they be turned off by that? How does he thread the needle of, I said no gas tax hike, no registration fee increase, but this user fee is okay? So there are some potential road bumps, but he's looking like in decent shape. And at 48%, he's right around where he was in October of 14, before he got reelected. So, you know, the trends in the trend lines in the right direction.
Heavy truck fee does not get approved. Mixed.
Kathleen Vinehout, so she's registered, filed the run, but she's not really running yet. It's kind of a weird thing where in Wisconsin law, we don't have an exploratory committee. So she changed registration in mid-June quietly. Some reporters picked up on it this week and said, oh, wait, this mean you're running? No, it's just a paperwork thing. I'm just exploring it. This is the raise and spend money. Because, you know, she's a senator right now, a different spending fundraising limits compared to when you're
giving
senator.
Them.
So opens a door for a little bit more flexibility there. We kind of assume that Vinehout wants to run. She sent signals she wanted to. She ran the primary in 2012 in the recall election, did not do very well.
Right.
Was building toward a race in late 13. We got in a car accident and dropped out, which she recovered from injuries. The problem for, or the challenge for Vinehout is, can she aggressively raise money? She did not prove that to date, that she can. There is a segment of the Democratic base that does not like money in politics, which is great. You know, that's fine if that's your perspective. But money drives campaigns. And when Scott Walker's going to raise $30+ million. And you've got $5,000 in the bank in December,
yep,
you're not a serious candidate to some people because you don't have the financial chops to create a valid statewide operation and a sophisticated digital campaign. That's where things are going these days. So that's her challenge. Compare what she's saying to Soglin, who's, you know, self-prescribed liberal, saying, I could raise $15 to $20 million. He's looking at the money thing going, this is real. We haven't seen that yet from Kathleen Vinehout.
And falling.
So Donald Trump, we talked about his numbers.
51% disapproval.
Remember, this is before the tweets this week about these Morning Joe talk show hosts, which,
yes,
the latest round of, like, what is this guy doing kind of thing. The big question for Donald Trump is, he's not getting more popular. His numbers about his judgment, likability, they're all about the same as they were in October. But he won in October because he was getting Hillary Clinton. The bigger question is he going to become a drag on Republicans next year in Wisconsin? Now, you could argue, and you will if you're a Republican, that look at last fall, and Ron Johnson, for example, ran ahead of Donald Trump. So Republicans are trying to spin this as Donald Trump is a party unto himself in voters' minds. We are not going to be that dragged down by him. Democrats are saying, wait a second, this guy's at 41%. You know, this is a, like, red zone, blinking lights, danger area right now. And this is before this latest round. It's not going to get better. If he keeps here, we have all kinds of fodder to do stuff. And, oh, by the way, Scott Walker had him in for a fundraiser a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure Governor Walker will have him back anytime soon if these tweets continue, because it becomes, you know, but there's also this other dynamic for Republicans. There's this new breed of Trump voter who came out in western Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, who either are new voters or Dems who went to the, can they keep those guys engaged? If they can, you know, you can maybe mitigate the expected drop off in a, or whip or backlash against the White House because of the party in charge.
Yeah,
but can they keep those guys engaged? That's a big question Republicans going to next year.
That's a good point, following President Trump for all the reasons you just outlined. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for June 30. And J.R., happy new state fiscal year.
Same to you.
Thank you.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.